Okay, welcome back everyone to our reemergence of Daf a Week. I apologize for the long hiatus, but God willing, we will plow through for the next few weeks and hope to make a seam on Maseches Chagiga the next couple of months. Maybe we'll shoot for maybe like around January 1st time, perhaps. So let's get started. So we are, like I said, we are on Yud Tes Amid Aleph. And we are 14 lines up from the down from the top at the last three words of the line Elamei Hadatnan. So we were speaking last time about this notion that when it comes to remember we were speaking about the laws of Tumah and Tahara, and so we said that when it comes to when I purify myself for eating chulin, right, eating non-sanctified food. So there was a statement that was made that I do. I'm just going to ask everyone to mute themselves. I'll mute you. Just no background noise. So we were saying that when it comes to eating chulin, when it comes to eating unsanctified foods, that there is if you are when you go to be matahir yourself, right? And like nowadays, we wash natilas yadayim. So if you go ahead and you wash natilas yadayim before you eat your challah roll, whatever it is, that's just totally non-sanctified food. So we said that you don't have to have kavana. There is no need to have the right that intent that you say when I'm doing the natilas yadayim that my hands are in the water, that this is for to be able to purify myself. So in other words, if you sort of just dip your hands in some water, or you just had like some rain falls, I don't know, and it happens to fall, well, rain's a bad example, but you just happen to pour some water on your hands, so even if you don't have the kavana that this is for netilas yadayim, that this is for purifying your hands, and even so we said that can count as a purification for your hands when it comes to chulin and chulin only. And we were trying to find a source for this, so we went back and forth what might be the source for this, and the Gemara rejected some previous answers, but now we're going to try to give a solid answer. So says the Gemara again, 14 lines down from the top, Yud Tes Amid Aleph, the last three words on the line, Elameha Tetan. So Elameha. So really, we say we can learn the source that when it comes to purifying our hands for chulin food, that we don't have to have the right kavana. We can learn this from the following Tetan that it says in the Mishnah, Peros Shenaflu L'toch Amas Hamayim. Let's say I have fruit that fell into some sort of a body of water, upashat misheyadav tumeos unetalan, and my hands were tame, and I placed my tame hands into the water, and I took the fruit. So yadav tahoro, says this Mishnah, that his hands are going to be tahor just from putting his hands into the water. Upiros inan ba kiyutan, and so there's a halachic reality that we call chiyutan, that literally means that like if it's called the in English the law of if the water is placed. And so what this halacha basically is that we're told that we need that there are certain liquids that will prepare certain objects to become tummy. So, for example, if you get some water on your fruit, then that's called that's machshir in the tumah, that it's now prepared to become tummy. If something tummy touches it, then it will become tummy through that water. And so we say over here that when it comes to this individual who put his hands into the water and he grabs the fruit, so we say that two things. Number one, his hands are pure, just even though he had no kavana to purify his hands, he just put his hands in the water, so his hands are pure. And the fruit that's in the water at this point is not going to be considered under the category of the halacha of kiyutan, which basically means that even though it's wet, the water that's touching it will not prepare it, make this apple, whatever it is, able to become tame. It will need to have other water go on it. Those are the two halachas we learn. But let's say we say that the guy happens to um Yeah, right. So yeah, let's say he put his hands into the water with the kavana of washing his hands, right? So he went into the water and he took the produce, right? So yadav tahoro. So again, his hands are going to be tahor, right? Because he did it with kavana. So without kavana, it didn't count. So now that he has kavana, so of course it's going to count as well. His hands will be tahor. Seemingly, when we say sheyud chuyadav, that he went to wash his hands, we're not talking about tahara, that he wanted to wash some dirt off or whatever. So he went to wash his hands off. So his hands are going to be tahor. And the fruit now is going to be included in the category of kiyutan, meaning that the water that is around the fruit is going to be machshir, is going to prepare this apple, this produce, for tumah. So a little complicated over here, but essentially the way we're meant to view this is as follows, that when it comes to him putting his hands into the water the first time, the reason why he's putting his hand into the water was because he wanted to take the produce out, which means he really does not want the water there, he just wants the produce, and it happens to be that the produce is in the water. So just like he doesn't need kavana for chulin, so we see that this is a proof he doesn't need kavana for chulin, because he went ahead and put his hands in just to get the fruit, and his hands became tahor. But because of the fact that he did not want the water there, that water does not have the ability to be metame the fruit. However, in the second case of the Mishnah, in which we're told that he actually wanted to wash his hands, since he wanted to wash his hands, that means he wanted the water there. So again, his hands are going to be tahor once again, right? That goes without saying. But what is different this time is that since he wants the water there, that means he wanted the fruit to go into the water, which means the fruit now can be machshir, the water can now be machshir the fruit to become tummy. It's all about, again, totally separate halacha over here, but it's all about the kavana of if he wanted the water. Since he showed that he wants the water, that he wants the water because he wanted to be able to wash his hands, so that must mean that this water has the ability to be machshir these fruits to become tummy. So those are the two halachas we learn out, but it's clear over here that nonetheless, the one thing we see for our purposes is that when it comes to chul, when it comes to purifying our hands for non-sanctified foods, one does not need kavana to when you wash them, because we see two cases over here. He put his hands in and he washed his hands neither time with the kavana that they should become tahor, and in both situations they were tahor. So that's the clear implication from this Mishnah. Okay, so with that, we are now going to have a few issues with this. So says the Gemara, and Howie, just so you know, we are on how many lines down now? Let's see, 2, 4. We're like 16 line, 16 lines down from the top in Yud Tesemet Aleph for the words Eisvei Rabba L'Rav. So says the Gemara, Eisvei Rabba L'Rav Nachman. So Rabba now, he says, Rabba now challenges Rav Nachman with the following Mishnah that we just learned. Hatovel L'chulin, V'huch Zak L'chulin. So if one... he's going to bring a challenge from our own Mishnah that we started with however many weeks ago. So hatovel lechulin uhuchzak lechulin. So if one was tovel himself for chulin food and he had the kavana to purify himself for chulin food, then aser lemaser, then he is going to be prohibited from eating maser sheni, meaning because since the kavana was for chulin, right? So we said that it doesn't work for the next level up; it only works for the levels down. So he was tovel for chulin, he could eat chulin, but he can't eat maser sheni. If he was tovel for maser sheni, then he could eat maser sheni and chulin. Okay, so aser lemaser, so he can't eat maser sheni. Huchzak ein. So the implication of the Mishnah is that if he intended to be tovel himself to eat chulin, then he is allowed to eat the chulin. But lo huchzak lo. But seemingly the Mishnah says over here, the implication is that if he did not have the right kavana to said I'm toveling myself now for the chulin so that I could eat chulin, that this will be a purification process for me, then the implication is that he needed the kavana, and if he didn't have the kavana, then he would not be tahor. And so therefore we see that maybe you do need kavana when it comes to being tovel yourself, washing your hands, netilas sedayim for chulin food. So it says the Gemara, no, hachik amar. The Mishnah is really saying as follows. Even though he intended to be tovel himself for the chulin, asur lemaaser, he is still going to be prohibited from eating Maaser Sheni. Meaning, don't bring an implication, like you're saying, where the implication, there is an implication to be made, but not the one that you're saying. It's not the implication that you need to have Kavana to be Tovel for Chulin. It's rather that if you had the intention to be Tovel for Chulin, that must mean that you cannot eat Maaser Sheni. That's what the implication that should be made is, but not what you're saying. This does not show us that one is allowed to not have, must have intention for chulin. That was teaching us a totally different halacha to begin with. Okay, fine. So says the Gemara further. So Rabba again challenges Rav Nachman, and he says that our Mishnah, again, the one that we read a little while back, not today, but previously, Tavel v'lo hachsak, if one was Tovel himself without any kavana, right, he said, I'm just dunking in the water, whatever it is, just to take a bath, let's say. So ki'ilu lo Tavel, it's as if he did not, it's as if he never immersed himself for, in terms of Tumah and Tahara. My love, ki'ilu lo Tavel klal. So now the Mishnah is clearly saying that we considered it as if he didn't Tovel himself at all. So meaning that must mean that in every single situation, when you Tovel yourself without kavana, then it doesn't count as Tevila. Which means that even for chulin, if you tovel yourself without kavana, then it's not going to be considered a tefillah. Says the Gemara, lo, no. So Rav Nachman says, what are you talking about? Kilu lo tovel lemaiser. We're simply talking about over here that it's as if he was not tovel for, if he toveled for meiser without kavana, that it's not considered a tefillah or for anything greater than meiser. About tovel lechulin, but the one thing not included in that is that if he was tovel for chulin, then even if he didn't have kavana, seemingly he still would be able to purify himself for chulin. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to say what Rabba's response to Rav Nachman was in these situations after he challenged them, challenged from two areas of the Mishnah, and Rav Nachman seemingly gave pretty satisfactory answers. No reason to believe they were not good answers. So now we're going to see what Rabba's response was. So hu savar dache ka madchele. So he thought that Rav Nachman was just like kind of pushing him off. He said, really? Rav Nachman never answered my question. He just basically explained it differently, but come on, my svara still sounds good. So he pushed, so Rabba said that Rav Nachman's pushing me off. Nafak dak ve'ashkach. So he went out and he did some like investigation, a little drisha v'chakira, and he discovered that Rav Nachman actually was correct. Right? He found a proof for Rav Nachman's point that Rav Nachman kept saying that you don't need tevila for chulin. So he said, "Where's the proof from?" Because he found a brisa, the Tanya that is taught on the brisa, tava v'lo huchzak. If one was tovel himself and didn't have the intention to become tahor, Asr l'maaser u'mutar l'chulin, so he's going to be asr to eat maaser sheni, but he's going to be allowed to eat chulin. So evidently, this is an authoritative brisa, and therefore the brisa teaches us unequivocally that one does not need kavana when they're tovel for chulin. You can, if you're taking a bath in the water and you're fully tovel yourself, then even if it's not for the intention to purify yourself, you can eat chulin. And so that's ultimately what the halacha seems to be. And Rabba was ultimately therefore convinced by Rav Nachman's answers because Rabba found the brisa to prove that he was correct, that one does not need kavana to be tovel for chulin. Okay, so weiter. So now we've learned already that when it comes to someone who is tovel himself with the kavana, that basically you need to be able to have the kavana for what you are toveling yourself for. So that means that if I want to have meiser, I need to be tovel for meiser. If I am tovel for meiser, then that tevila will even count for chulin. However, it will not count for the thing that comes above that, and so on and so forth. That whatever I tovel for, that level of sanctity and below I can partake of, but anything with a higher level of sanctity I cannot partake of. So says the Gemara, therefore, Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says, Tavel va'Allah. So let's say one was tovel himself, and he came out of the mikvah, and he realized, so he went into the mikvah with the kavana to purify himself, to eat something, but he comes out of the mikvah and he says, you know what, I never had the kavana of what I wanted to eat. You know, he never said, I want to eat chulin, I want to eat meiser, I want to eat hektesh, whatever it is, he never said that. So says the Gemara, machzik atzmo l'chol mashiyirtza. So after he comes out of the mikvah, we say that he can basically create a kavana when he comes out of the mikvah, that whatever he wants to eat, he can say, I was really tovel for that reason. So essentially, it's kind of amazing. So you're tovel to become tahor. You didn't say what you're becoming tahor to eat. So basically, you could eat whatever you want, as long as you say that this is my kavana. That unbelievable halacha from Rabbi Elazar. Says the Gemara then in response to this, Mesi, what are you talking about, Rabbi Elazar? Odehu raglo achas b'mayim. Let's say one still has 1 foot in the water after they are coming out of the mikvah. Huchzak ledavar kal. So if he originally had the kavana for like something less stringent, let's say chulin, machzik atzmo the davar chamor. So while he still has his foot in the mikvah, he can go ahead and change it to something more stringent. So if he originally had kavana for chulin, again, don't need kavana for chulin, but just for easiness of explanation over here. So he had 1 foot in the water of the mikvah still. He had the kavana for chulin, and he says, you know what? He still has 1 foot in, and I'm going to change my kavana. I'm going to say that I'm to be Tovel for Meiser Sheni. So we say, he can change his mind for a more stringent item. Allah, but if he came out of the mikveh entirely, Shuv Eino Machzik, he can no longer change his intention. So if he went in for Chulin, and then he leaves and he doesn't even have a foot in, he's totally out of the mikveh, so he can no longer change his kavana. So my love, Eino Machzik Klal. So now, with this said, so isn't it presumable that the Braisa means that he Mamish can't be changing his kavana at all, meaning no matter whether he intended at the time of his tefillah for a less stringent reason, or whether he didn't have any kavana at all, right? So in other words, the difference between this statement and what Rabbi Elazar said is that this guy went in with a kavana, and Rabbi Elazar is that it was a kavana for something. He just wants to up it one level, and we say as long as he has 1 foot in, he can up it to the next level. However, according to Rabbi Elazar's statement, he never had any kavana going in. It was just a kavana to purify, but not for a specific level. And so Rabbi Elazar said, even if he's totally out, since he chose no level, he can now choose a level once he comes out. So the Gemara basically is saying, from this brisa that we just quoted, that this brisa refutes Rabbi Elazar, because the implication is that whether or not he had kavana for any level, you can never change your kavana unless you still have 1 foot in the water. So says the Gemara, lo. No, that's not true at all. You're misunderstanding the Braisa. The Braisa is saying that Odehu, if he still has 1 foot in the water, afal pisha huchzak machzik, even though he had one original kavana that was for one level, a less stringent level, he can now go ahead and switch it to a higher level since he has 1 foot in. But Allah, once he came out of the mikvah, im lo huchzak machzik, if he never had an intention for any level, then he is now allowed to go ahead and have a kavana for whatever level he wants it to be. Vim huchzak ino machzik, but if he already had kavana for a particular level, then once he came out of the mikvah, he can't switch it to a different level. So in other words, what the Braisa essentially is saying is that it's like the next halacha from Rabbi Elazar's standpoint. Rabbi Elazar says if you never had kavana going in, it's for a level, so now when you come out entirely, you can create a level. The Braisa says, okay, but let's say you had a level, and so if you had a level, if you had a foot in, you can change, but if you're totally out, you can't change, and it has to be whatever it is. That's how we are able to explain this Braisa over here. Okay. Right, and that's how we say it's not really a challenge to Rabbi Elazar. Okay, so now says the Gemara further. So man tana. So basically, the Braisa says that if this guy still has his 1 foot in the water, that he can switch his kavana. So where do we get this from, right? So who says that someone could change their kavana even if they're mostly out of the water? So man tana. So who is this tana? Udehu raglo achas b'mayim, that if he still has 1 foot in the water, that it's considered as if he is still being tovel in the mikvah, and therefore he can change his kavana, right? Everyone agrees that if you're in the mikvah, that you can change your kavana. If you're planning to go for a lenient thing and your mom is totally in the mikvah, of course you could change your kavana. Why not, right? So, but this tana who says that even if you have 1 foot in, how does that work? How are you to understand that? So Amar Rabbi Pedas. So Rabbi Pedas says as follows. Rabbi Yehuda, it's Rabbi Yehuda whose opinion this is, did not, because we learned in a Mishnah that mikvah shenimdad v'yishbo arbayim sa'a mechuvanos. So if a mikvah was measured one day, and it was found that it has exactly 40 sa'a. So 40 sa'a is an important number because that's the exact amount of water that you need in the mikvah. If you have a little bit less, it's not a kosher mikvah. So it was discovered that the mikvah only had exactly 40 sa'a. So v'yardu shnaim v'tavlu za'achar za'a, and two people go into the mikvah, and guy one goes in, he comes out, and then the other guy goes in and he comes out. So harishon tahor v'asheni tamei. The first one is going to be tahor, and the second one is going to be tamei. Why would the second one be tamei? He went into the mikvah. Well, it's understandable. The reason why he's tamei is because, of course, the first guy took out a milliliter of water. He took out a little bit of water, and so therefore, since there was exactly 40 sa'a, now that the second guy is out and he took a little bit of water, that must mean that the second guy was not tovel in a full mikvah, so he is not tahor. Amar Rabbi Huda says, im hayu raglav shel rishon nogos b'mayim, but if the feet of the first one were still touching the water when the second guy was tovel himself, then we say af hasheni tahor, then even the second one is going to be tahor. So there's some interesting halacha over here when it comes to his foot still being in the water. What in the world is going on over here? So this is actually halacha. It's somewhat relevant to sukkahs, right? How we view the walls of a sukkah. For example, do we say that if your wall of a sukkah is not so tall, it's only 10 tefachim high, and your schach is, let's say, 10 amos high. So how does that work? So we could say gurachis, that there's something called that we view it as if it's extending from where it is all the way to the top. So basically, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is based on this principle of gurachis, that we believe that something has the ability to extend sometimes down and sometimes up. So we see over here that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that when this guy's foot is in the mikvah, even though the water is on his body, so we say the gurachis, and the water that's on his body is essentially still part of the mikvah, and therefore the guy who's now tovel while this guy's foot is still in the water, it's as if he's tovel in the mikvah with the 40 sa'a, even though it's not actually all right there in this pool at the moment. So that's why the guy is going to be tahor, the second guy is going to be tahor, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Says the Gemara further, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Barabu. What's Rav Nachman say in the name of Rabba Barabu? Machlokas b'malos derabban. The argument over here that we just said is only regarding sort of like these chumras, rabbinic chumras, meaning they're not arguing about tevila on a Torah level. They're arguing about various rabbinic chumras that they were tobeling, they were immersing themselves in a mikvah to satisfy certain rabbinic stringencies. Avami tuma la tahara, but if he is going from a state of complete tuma to a state of tahara on a biblical level, divrei hakol hasheni tamei, then everyone agrees, even Rabbi Yehuda, that the second person is going to be tamei. That we don't have a principle of gurachis when it comes to Torah level tevila. So therefore, the second guy is going to be tamei if this is a Torah level from tahara to tuma. But if it's just a rabbinic level of tuma that he's trying to get out of, he's already tahor on a d'oraisa level. Then we say that then that's where the machlokas is existing, and Rabbi Yehuda would be makel in that situation, and the Tanakhama would be stringent even in that situation. The hainu right, the hainu de Rabbi Pedas, and this statement of Rav Nachman is in total agreement with that of Rabbi Pedas, right? You remember Rabbi Pedas was the one who said that that Rabbi Yehuda was the author of our Mishnah, because he assumed that Rabbi Yehuda believed that the foot of an individual can extend then can basically make it as if that the person is still in the mikvah. So says so basically this teaching of Rav Nachman is in agreement with that of Rabbi Pedas. So Ikadamri, so but there are those that say that actually here is how it was taught. I'm Rav Nachman, I'm Rabba Barabuha. Rav Nachman said the name of Rabba Barabuha. Machlokas mitzuma letahara. The argument is regarding an individual who is going from a biblical state of tuma to a biblical state of to then becoming a biblically tahor. But if the person is being told for rabbinic stringency reasons, divrei hakol afashini tahor. Everyone agrees, even the Tanakhama, even the rabbis, that the second person is also going to be tahor. So, right, upliga de Rabbi Pedas, and this statement of Rav Nachman that we quoted this second way is in a disagreement with Rabbi Pedas, and the reason why that is essentially So the reason why that is essentially is because Rabbi Pedas says that the notion of the foot still being in the mikveh, that should be significant. So according to the first way we understood this, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's significant only in the case of rabbinic stringency. So that's just like Rabbi Pedas, because Rabbi Yehuda is the only one who says that such a thing ever exists. But according to the second way we read it, that even the rabbis say that there are times when the foot in the mikveh could make a difference. So how do you know? Maybe Rabbi Pedas is wrong. Maybe the author of our Mishnah is not Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe it's the rabbis. It's not so clear from that. And so that's why the second statement of Rav Nachman is not seems to be in some level of disagreement with Rabbi Pedas. Okay, with that said, the Gemara is going to go further now, trying to understand really what Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is. So Rabbi Yehuda, again, seems to have this very lenient perspective that if your foot's in the mikvah, then it's as if you're in the mikvah. So says the Gemara, Amar Ula. Ula says, "By minei Rami Rabbi Yochanan." He says, I asked a question from Rabbi Yochanan, the Rabbi Yehuda, regarding the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Mahu lahatbil michatin v'tzinorios b'rosho shel rishon. He says, what's going to be the halacha when it comes to being tovel, some sort of like very small utensils, like needles and spinning forks, I don't know what that is exactly, but some very small utensils. So can I be tovel these very small utensils in the head of the first person while his feet are still in the water? In other words, this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, we're really putting it to the test. If this guy has one foot in the mikveh and he's considered like he's still in the mikveh, that must mean if he has excess water on his hair, which probably he does, so I want to use the water on his hair to be tovel my little miniature utensils. Would that be permissible? You would want to say, absolutely, why not? So says the Gemara, Gur aches isle le Rabbi Yehuda. Do we say that when it comes to the principle of garaches, this notion of like an imaginary extension, so do we see that the principle of garaches that Rabbi Yehuda accepts, but garachic lacely, when it comes to okay, I apologize, let's clarify for a second. So there's something called garaches, and there's something called garaches and garachic. Let's use Sfardit. There's good achit and good asik. So good achit is basically when we say that something is virtually extending and it goes lower. Good asik is when we say that it's virtually extending and it goes higher. So essentially, the question over here is, we said already that according to Rabbi Yehuda, he believes in good achit. Why? Because that means that this guy comes out of the mikveh, his foot is still in there. We say that it's as if he is still in the mikveh, that the water on him is still in the mikveh, so that the water is sort of extending downwards, even though it's up here. But according to this question that Ula is asking, if we want to know if we're allowed to tovel in the guy's hair because it's still wet, that even though there's a couple of milliliters of water in the hair, so why would that be okay? Well, it would be okay if this guy's foot is still in the mikveh, if we say good asik, that the water is extending upwards, and even though there's a few milliliters of water in his hair, he is like one with the mikveh in essence, and therefore it's as if he's being tovel in the 40 sa'ah with a few milliliters in the guy's hair. So do we say that good achis is acceptable to Rabbi Yehuda, but good asik is not acceptable? Odemar, maybe good asik nami isle. Maybe he also says that good asik works. So this was Ula's question that he asked from Rabbi Yochanan. Amrali, so he said to Ula, Tanisuha, he says, you can learn it from the following braisa. Shalosh gemamios banacha, that there were three holes, that each of them had water, and they were sort of on like this incline of a valley. So Ray, just imagine like a hill, and so there's a hole here in the ground, a hole here, and a hole here, right? So Ha'el Yona, there is an upper hole in the ground, there is a lower hole in the ground, and there's a middle hole in the ground. So the upper one and the lower one each contain 20 sa'ah. The ha'emtza'it shall arba'im sa'ah, and the middle one contains 40 sa'ah. The chardalis shall geshemim overes b'nehen, and there is some sort of like a trench or whatever of rainwater that passes between the three holes. Basically, what it does is it kind of connects all three holes. So all three holes are connected. Again, the upper one and the lower one have 20 sa'ah each, and the middle one has 40 sa'ah each, which means the middle one by itself is a a kosher mikvah, but the upper and the lower one are really the ones in question. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Meir Haya Omer, Meir, right, Meir is Rabbi Meir, but he was like a colleague of him, so just like rabbis, right, I don't call Rabbi Eben when I'm speaking to him privately, I call him Ira, and so too over here. That's because he gave me permission. I probably would call him Rabbi anyways, but whatever. Right? So but Rabbi Yehuda, he referred to his colleagues, as great as they were, he referred to them as Meir, even though it's Rabbi Meir to us. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Meir Haya Omer, he says, Meir used to say, Matbil by El Yona. He says, one can immerse things in the upper one, because we say, what? We say, good asik, that the way it works is that the water goes upwards. And basically, since Rabbi Yehuda is quoting Rabbi Meir's halach over here, we can assume that he is in agreement with it. So in other words, so clearly when it comes to good asik, he accepts, but when it comes to good... Right. So over here, since we see Rabbi Yehuda saying that Rabbi Meir, since Rabbi Yehuda is quoting Rabbi Meir's halacha, and Rabbi Meir says that one can use this upper water, so clearly he agrees with Rabbi Meir, since he's not arguing with him. And Rabbi Meir says you can use the upper one, which must mean that we are viewing it as if the water is rising up, which is good asik. So we see over here that Rabbi Yehuda clearly does not only hold of good achis, which we've seen already clearly, but here we also see that he holds a good asik, which means that he doesn't believe that it can virtually go lower, but he also believes that it can virtually go higher as well. Okay, that's what, which means you would be able just to clarify what the ramifications of that are based on how we're understanding it now. That means according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could like be tova the little things in the guy's wet hair. That's the ramifications of this. Okay, so that's what Rabbi Yochanan said to Ula, when Ula asked this question. Va'atanya, but Ula then said it back to him. We have a brisa. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says, we're now in Yud Tes Amud Beis, a short Amud. Meir Haya Omer, that Meir used to say, Matbil Ba'el Yona, that one can be tova things in the upper one. Va'ani Omer, but I say, Batachtona Ve'lo Ba'el Yona, that in the lower one can be tova, but in the upper one cannot be tova. Right? So in other words, it was a fair point that Rabbi Yochanan was making, but basically what Ula says back to him is that that's a very nice point, but there's another teaching that contradicts it, because there is a location where Rabbi Yehuda quotes Rabbi Meir, but he argues in Rabbi Meir, which means he doesn't hold like Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says we hold good asik, but Rabbi Yehuda says no, we only hold of good achis, that we say that the water can lower down, we view it as virtually lowering down, but we don't view it as virtually going up. So again, that Meir says you could be tovel in the upper one, right, because the water is going up, but Rabbi Yehuda was saying that in the lower one, you can be tovel because he agrees the water is virtually going down, but when it comes to the upper one, you cannot use because we don't believe that the water is going up. We don't believe in good asik in this situation. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, Amar Lei, he says back to Ula, Itani Itani. He says, okay, listen, I didn't know that brisa. He says, if it was taught in a brisa, then it was taught, and I'll take back what I said. It's an interesting reality that just took place over here, because Ula asked the question to Rabbi Yochanan because he seemingly did not know the answer. Rabbi Yochanan answers based on his own reasoning, and then Ula says, actually, no, there's a brisa that contradicts what you're saying. So it's a little bit odd, because it's as if Ula was setting up Rabbi Yochanan. A little unclear what was happening. Maybe what happened was Ula heard Rabbi Yochanan's idea. He said, that's a nice idea. But then maybe he went out and asked a few other people, and maybe he heard this brisa then. So maybe we're reading the story without some of the pauses and some of the going out and researching, but maybe that's what happened. But otherwise, it's a very weird conversation, because he looks like he's just setting him up for a trap. Okay, let's do a little bit more further. Let's just finish up this Amud as well. So we're up to the next statement in our Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, so we say that one who is tovel himself for chulin, and he has the kavana to be tovel himself only for chulin, then he is not allowed to eat ma'aser sheni, right? Because you can be tovel for the tefillah, for the kavana of the tefillah works for less stringent things, but it cannot work for more stringent things. Okay, so says the Gemara, Mani Masnisin, who is the Tana of our Mishnah? Says the Gemara, Rabbanan, he was clearly the rabbis. The Shani Lehu, bein chulin l'maiser, because they make some sort of a distinction between chulin and maiser sheni, and our Mishnah also makes a distinction between them. So therefore, there you have it. Ema seifa, but we have a problem because the seifa of our Mishnah, it says big day am haaretz midras laprushin, that the clothing of an am haaretz is going to be considered tamei through midras for purushin, big day purushin midras laochle truma, and then we immediately jump from jump to say that the clothing of the purushin is considered tamei through midras for those who eat truma. So it's hard to think back and remember, but basically what the Mishnah is going on over here is that the Mishnah skips over the level of Ma'aser Sheni. So in other words, in the first part of the Mishnah, we go from Chulin to Ma'aser Sheni to Truma. Here in the second part of the Mishnah, we go from Chulin straight to Truma. So that's a little bit odd, because it would seem to be that in the first part of the Mishnah that we agree that Ma'aser Sheni and Chulin are two different levels of sanctity, but in the second part of the Mishnah, in the Seifa, it seems like Chulin and Ma'aser Sheni are the same levels of sanctity, because when you say Chulin, we assume that means Ma'aser Sheni, and then you go up again to the next level, which is Truma. So what's going on over here? So says the Gemara, Asan Rabbi Meir. So it must be that this follows Rabbi Meir. So in other words, what we find that the first part of our Mishnah follows the rabbis, follows the Rabbanan, and the second part follows Rabbi Meir. Damar Chulin u'Maiser Kahadadi, who says that Chulin and Maiser Shini, that they're the same thing in terms of the laws of purity to one another. Reisha Rabbanan v'seva Rabbi Meir. So says the Gemara, what? How can it be? They have a Mishnah that the first part of the Mishnah is going to be like one person, and the second part of the Mishnah is going to be like Rabbi Meir. Why would you, it could happen, but why would you set yourself up for that? Maybe you're just understanding something wrong. So the Gemara says, that's what it is. We have no other way to say it. The Reisha Rabbanan v'Seifa Rabbi Meir. The first part of the Mishnah is the Rabbanan, and the second part is Rabbi Meir. So now the Gemara is going to say, wait a second. Rav Acha bar Ada Masne la b'Seifa Chamesh Malos. Rav Acha bar Ada taught the second part of the Mishnah that it had five different levels, right? Umoki la kula karabanan. And therefore he establishes that the entire Mishnah is actually like the rabbis, meaning he's saying, you're right. You could learn the second part of the Mishnah, that there's only four levels of sanctity, but according to Rav Acha bar Ada, when he taught the Mishnah over here, he explained that even though the Mishnah left it out, maybe it didn't really mean to leave it out, or we're understanding it wrong a little bit, so he said that even in the second part of the Mishnah, there are five levels of Tumah, which means that he said that not only is the first part of the Mishnah according to the rabbis, but even the second part of the Mishnah is according to the rabbis as well. And then says the Gemara further, Amar Rav Madi, so Rav Madi, Amar Rav Mari, or Rav Mari said, Shema Mina, we can learn from here that Chulin Shinasu al Tahara Sakodesh, that Chulin that was prepared according to the Tahara standards of Kodesh, according to the sanctity standards of Kodesh, Kodesh Damu, is like the Kodesh itself. So in other words, we say that Chulin normally is Chulin, it's like a non-sanctified food, but if you prepare it with the same level of sanctity that you would a Kodesh food, then it has those similar properties of Kodesh food, and you should treat it accordingly. It says the Gemara, Mimai, where are you getting this from? So now we're on the top of Chaf Amin Aleph, and we'll stop here. Midalo Katani Behu Mala, because the Mishnah doesn't teach us because the Mishnah does not teach a separate level regarding them. So basically, in other words, what we're saying over here is that if you look at how the Mishnah is connecting both Ma'aser Sheni and Chulin, it's that we're essentially saying that as long as you treat them identically, if you treat Chulin like Ma'aser Sheni, then you can consider it to be like Ma'aser Sheni, which basically shows us that as long as you treat a food item that's at a lower level of sanctity, you treat it as if it's at a higher level of sanctity, then it has to be treated with that same level of higher sanctity. And so that's what we'll pick up with here next week, God willing. We'll probably just review that last part just to make sure we understand it well, but with that, we'll call it a night, and I wish everyone a beautiful evening, and see everyone next week.